Hey Venki, how are you?
I'm good, Praneet. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for taking time and coming on to my show.
No worries. It's a pleasure.
How was tour of Nilgiris?
Tour of Nilgiris was fantastic. I had a blast. It was my 11th year there. So, yeah, it's been a blast like all the previous editions. I had a ton of fun. Made new friends, made lots of new memories. So what else can you ask for?
That's awesome. Okay, let's get into your intro. Tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you get into biking?
I got into biking back in 2008, 2000 October to 23rd, 2008 to be precise, is when I bought my first bicycle, a Hero Hawk from King Koti. I was living in Hyderabad back then, so that's when I bought my first bike. That was the start of my cycling journey as such. Yeah, so but there is a little bit of a story leading up to that point when I bought the first bike. It is the thing is why I bought the bike is to since until that point, say October to 2008, I 8 months before that I started my weight loss journey in February 2008, and I lost about 16 kilos in 8 months leading up to that point. And that is to kind of put context to that. I was always a bit of a chubby kid growing up, and I always as I grew, kind of when I became conscious of became conscious of my weight from being bullied in
Bullied.
school, of course, in school and college, being fat shamed and all that, right? It's always there in subtle or not so subtle ways. Kids, we almost all of us as kids are tend to be a little meaner, not very sensitive to what other people think or feel and stuff like that. So that happened a lot with me. And as I got into college, though, I kind of tried to tried a lot of things to kind of lose weight and all that, but never really stuck, because I always loved food, and my love for food always trumped any kind of body image issues that I might have had, right? So, but as I grew, also the health was an issue.
I
Even
see.
as a kid, I had asthma issues. I had many issues with regards to health, including asthma, trying to not trying to breathe, not able to sleep through the nights, coughing through the night, and all that. So as that kind of those health issues kind of continued as I grew up as well. As an youngster, also I faced the similar issues, but once I got married, and we were expecting our first kid, it was February 16th, 2008. We kind of went out to Prasad's IMAX to kind of watch a movie and celebrate my birthday and stuff. And that is when I we were expecting our first child when we in Prasad's IMAX, I was checking my weight. That those fancy weighing machines,
yeah, the coin ones,
give, right? Like BMI and all that, right? So I was checking weight and it showed me 92 kilos.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and it told me that I was 20 kilos overweight. And I said, then I, but I also knew that I was overweight, but I also knew that I was not very healthy in terms of my health, you know, falling sick every month almost, right?
Sure. Yeah,
so at that day, something clicked in me saying, I looked at my wife who was carrying our first child, and I looked at her and thought, this thought came to me that, you know, if I am not able to take care of myself and my health, how am I going to take care of my family? You know,
gotcha. Yeah.
Will I be able to, you know, be around to see my kid grow? That thought kind of triggered something in me that that became my motivation from that time. You know, on our way back from that Prasad's trip, we stopped at a sports, you know, shop, and and bought a badminton racket, because that's I see every day there are a couple of you know, people playing badminton in our apartment, so I thought I would join them. So on the way back, I bought a badminton racket and joined them the next day. Right. Gotcha. Yeah. And within 5 minutes, I was down and out. These guys were in their, these guys were in their 50s, probably 60s. And they were able to, you know, stay fit by playing this. and I was there, you know, really unfit, really unhealthy. So I couldn't really move because I was overweight, I was unfit. So within a couple of minutes, I was huffing and puffing and, you know, sitting on the sidelines while these guys who I was looking at as uncles and all that, you know, they were they were smashing it, right? So but I was very dejected, but, you know, also it continued to show up the following day and the following day. I continued to show up. So as the days went by, it became, you know, those 5 minutes became 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I was able to kind of slowly progress, you know, the time, increase the time that I was able to play nonstop. So that kind of became the thought of being there for my kids, seeing them grow, became my reason why that I kept showing up and not giving up in between. And that those 8 months that followed, I lost 16 kilos. I reduced.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I reduced my portion sizes in terms of eating, you know, only so much that what I need, instead of eating to live rather than living to eat, so to speak. And that also kind of, you know, that was a big change. I started eating early dinners and all that. So that became my weight loss journey. And by that time, October came around, my kid was born in April, and October came around, he was 6 months old. And, you know, I needed to spend more time with him as well, right? Because by that time, I was spending at least an hour or two in the morning to for my fitness routine, for my, you know, staying active and losing weight, right? So the thought came saying, okay, I need to spend, as the kid grows, I need to spend more time with him. Should I do something else that kind of doesn't take as much time, right? And then I thought, why not integrate, exercise with something that I do daily, which is commuting.
Okay. Yeah. So, sounds exciting.
Yeah. And that's when I thought, okay, let me get a bicycle and commute to work on that. So I get both, because...
Yeah, nice plan.
Both exercise, I'll get exercise and I need to anyway get to work. So that's how the thought of getting a cycle came into the picture. But ironically, that, immediately after a few weeks, I realized that whatever commute that I was doing from Miapur to High Tech City, or 7-8 kilometers each way, was not doing much for me, because I was doing a lot more in terms of fitness, okay. Right? So, yeah. Then I started doing weekend rides. Like in the weekend, Saturday and Sunday mornings, I would go out, do 30, 40, 50 kilometers. And that's how the weekend rides kind of came into the picture. Mm-hmm. And that became the primary passion. Primary, exploring new places, and that thrill of that endorphins that I kind of get while riding out and exploring nature. So that became new high. And the thought of ironically, I started cycling to kind of save time, but I started spending more time on the bike, in the weekends and stuff. But I kind of started enjoying that, and cycling became a primary passion, and rest, the badminton and all those things kind of took a backstage. And that's how my cycling journey started back in 2008.
Wow, so nice. So how did you transition from small distances to long distance biking?
So I'm never really into long distances as such. I mean, our definition of long distance needs to be kind of put forth, I guess. It depends. It's all relative, right? When you commute 7 kilometers, that might be long distance for some, and it might be very short for others. When I talk about long distances, I look at all these ultra distances, like 200, 300, 400, 500, all these things that randonneurs and ultra cyclists do. Those are the things right. that I consider longer distances. The longest I have done is 250 kilometers in a day. And that is 200. I have done a bunch of 200 kilometers nonstop and all that, but beyond that, okay. I don't go, because I want to be back home, spend time with the family and all that. So I restrict myself to 200 max, but typically a weekend ride would be 100 kilometers, 120 kilometers and something like that, 4 hours, 5 hours max. And coming back to your original question about how do you transition from a shorter distances right. to longer distances, right? So for someone who is doing 10 kilometers, anything over would be a longer distance, right? So exactly. There is this rule of thumb that we tend to suggest. Increase, even for runners and cyclists, right? Increase
mileage slowly.
yeah, increase mileage slowly over a period of time. And 10% increase over week on week is what if we typically suggest. We need to be a lot more conscious when it comes to running than, you know, cycling, because running is a lot more impact sport. Right. There is a lot more impact on joints and stuff. Cycling, while is less of an impact sport, it is still, you know, if you kind of rapidly increase your mileage, there is still scope for injuring yourself because it's a repetitive movement sport. Right. So the same rules apply, you know, gradually increase. So if you are doing, if your longest ride is like 20 kilometers now, increase it to 25, 30, not more than that. So the next week, the week after that, you would go to 35, 40. So gradually increase it and, you know, take it step by step.
Understood. Yeah, gotcha. We just spoke about how you dealt with asthma, right? Can you tell us how biking and endurance sports in general helps you beat the asthma?
Asthma, we need to be careful with, you know, experience-based, you know, advice, because it can be a case of one. In general, in my case, what happened is mine was mostly pollution related and dust allergic, and you know, these are the asthma can have lot of triggers, right? Mine is mostly pollution, dust related. These are the primary triggers. And for me, improving my aerobic capacity, aerobic ability kind of helped deal with that. My kind of immune system, the ability of my body to tackle these improved when my aerobic capacity improved. All these aerobic activities like running, cycling tend to improve your lung capacity and the ability to so that helped me in my case to deal with my asthma. But there can be many other triggers, so you got to be consulting medical professional to kind of see if exercise helps you in your case, and along with medication at the beginning. But you know, you can look at if things are improving, you can get away from that as well, which was the case in my case. Once I got fit, I was on inhalers, lot antihistamines and all those things over the years. But once I got fit, my aerobic capacity improved. I never had to go back to those medications. So, yeah.
That's very inspiring, right? Because no matter how much medication you take, exercise will make a significant impact on your health, right?
Yeah, definitely. And we need to be careful also, because there is such a thing called exercise-induced asthma, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. When you are, when you overexert, when you push beyond the limits that your body is capable of, that also can be a trigger for asthma attacks. So people have to be careful. People have to be aware of this and have to be careful when, you know, prescribing exercise as a kind of, it is not an all encompassing, remedy, so to speak. You know, it helps.
Yeah.
It helps in many ways, but you also have to be careful with this.
Gotcha. Like you consult a good doctor, and nutritionist and see what's best for you in terms of
correct that. And also, you know, take it gradually. When you are not able to walk a few meters without you know, running out of breath, you have to make sure that you only walk say 5 minutes a day, and then gradually increase over a period of time, and not do too much too soon, right? So
gotcha. Understood. And what kind of nutrition does it take for you to fuel the kind of training that you do in your bike, and what kind of nutrition that you follow in your long distance races?
So nutrition on a daily basis is a typical South Indian, you know, diet for me. Mornings, I'll have, there are times when I was like having a fruit bowl breakfast and all that. But typically all these idlis, dosas, and all these that are made in the morning in a typical South Indian household. is what I will have.
Yeah.
And afternoons, rice and vegetable curries and stuff like that. And evenings, typically my evening dinners will be a little lighter. It can be, you know, sometimes it depends on what I feel like that day, but typically it will be lighter dinners, will be a little bit of rice and curry, or sometimes I might just stick to fruit bowl or something like that. But, you know, that is in terms of diet, they're nothing special off the bike. But on the bike, I tend to rely on carb drinks for my energy most of the time. We look at 60 to 90 grams of carbohydrate intake per hour. So it also depends on the intensity and all that. Of the ride, if you are in a race scenario, it might be that you would be going at a much higher intensity and you would be expending a lot more energy, so your carbohydrate intake might need to be higher. It might need to be like closer to 90 or above than closer to 60 or below. Right. But on a typical easier endurance ride, you might be maybe needing only 50 or 60 grams per hour kind of scenario. And it also depends on person to person, how big he is, how little smaller he is, and what are the body's calorific needs and stuff.
Right.
But this is the typical range that you would look at. And those carbs can come in various forms. It can come in form of bananas. If you are able to carry those many, it can come in form of you know, peanut chickies or other chickies and dates and all that kind of, you know, those can be turned into energy bars, and those can fuel you. I tend to mostly rely on liquid nutrition, especially during races. And maybe an occasional gel thrown in there.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it sounds like you are mostly vegetarian, right?
I am not.
You're not, okay. But are you also? Because
I am. I'm mostly vegetarian is actually right, in the sense that I don't have non-veg all the time. It typically. Yeah. It is like once in a week kind of scenario. You know, growing up, it's like Sundays used to be like a non-veg day. So that kind of continues even now. Most of the days, it's all vegetarian. And once in a while, once in a week or so, would be non-veg. Yeah.
And like me too, while growing up in Karnataka, obviously, in my household to my parents would probably make chicken or any other meat once or twice in a week. But after I moved to the West, there was so much emphasis in like animal protein, literally, that you should have it almost in every meal, or there's so much importance given to high protein diet. And I'm still trying to follow that. And I see a lot of folks back in India too these days are emphasizing on that. So what's your take on that? Do you think a balanced nutrition is better than emphasizing on high protein diet?
I'm not a nutrition expert per se, but definitely.
Yeah, obviously, whatever worked best for you.
Correct. You know, I think there is enough enough protein in most of the food that we eat. All the dals and all the lentils that we consume as vegetarians, there is plenty of protein in that as well, right? And it's not that most of these things we tend to use. Rice and all these things, these are carb rich, but also all of these have, you know, minuscule portions of protein and stuff like that. So once you have I think in my opinion, if you are not calorie deficit in a big way, you would get enough protein through various means, be it the greens that you consume, be it the dals and lentils that you consume. All these have, you know, good amount of protein. So it is, I find it a little amusing, you know, considering that we have been living on this diet for centuries. And, and now suddenly, you know, this become, and we see, I mean, we have been living healthy on all this diet, but all of a sudden it becomes not very healthy, and you need all that extra protein.
Yeah, you see there's so many articles and videos, and especially criticize, I wouldn't say criticizing, but they say like, the South Indian food is carbohydrate dense food, you don't have protein, that's why most of you are like skinny fat and things like that. I think it's not true, because you see there's so many people fit, and especially in the back in the days, obviously, when the protein was not so emphasized or pushed upon, people were fit, and
There is a little bit of the diets that that we typically see now are not necessarily what were the back in the day. Right. We are now consuming a lot more refined stuff, ultra polished rice, and all these stuff.
A lot of processed
food that is devoid of vitamins and minerals. Right. So it kind of that kind of brings in all these deficits that we see nowadays. But if you look, go back a little bit and look at all these ragi balls and all these foods that millet-based foods and less refined, very like unpolished kind of rice that our fathers even used to consume, fathers and grandfathers used to consume, right? So that was a lot more healthier compared to what we are kind of consuming now. And this kind of discourse when it comes to now this is not very healthy, it's garbage and all that, kind of stems from this current the way we are kind of consuming right now, instead of focusing on whole foods and that are kind of diverse, including a lot of greens, a lot of veggies, and whole kind of unprocessed grains. That was our diet, right? So correct. If we kind of in whatever capacity, if we kind of try to veer towards that a little bit, then, you know, a lot of things can be better.
Yeah, very true. And obviously, South Indian food is probably the most delicious food.
Yeah, obviously, for us, yeah. Growing up on that, we would be, we would be inclined to think so. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I personally love to eat a lot too. Yeah. So I love food. Coming back to your biking, what is your hardest race?
I mean, hardest race, probably some of the rides, like the ride up Kalahati during a couple of TFN editions, right? So we tend to use that segment as a race segment. Kalahati climb is, for those who are not aware, to give a context, it is 11.5 kilometer climb with an elevation gain of 1150 meters. Oh, wow. Gain. So it's a 11.5, 10% climb with, occasional tilts up to 15% and all, right? So that is probably the hardest climb that I have done. More recently on, and it's not a race per se, but more recently I've been to Thailand, just earlier this month, and I've done this climb called Doi Inthanon, which is almost a 40 kilometer climb with 2,500 meters of elevation gain. But throughout the climb, there will be flatter sections. The earlier parts of the climb, there will be flatter sections and, occasional 10%, 15% stuff. But the last 9 kilometers is where, it's the steepest, in almost 10% in the last 9 kilometers. Oh, and wow. Yeah, so that is also one of the, hardest climbs that I have done. So these are very hard, but also gives you an unparalleled satisfaction once you get over them, right? Yes. So these are some of the memorable rides for me.
That's awesome. And how do you manage these steeps, especially while coming down? It's, you got to be very tactical when you apply those brakes and stuff like that, right?
Right.
How do you do them?
Yeah, more than tactical, you need to be technically sound. Okay. You need to know what to do. You need to know how to kind of manage your center of gravity. When you are going down a steep slope, you have to kind of move yourself a little back on the saddle, go back as back as possible on the saddle, and kind of so that your center of gravity is kind of maintained and you are able to keep balance as you are descending. So it also while climbing these steep climbs, if you are sitting properly on the saddle, your front wheel tends to kind of go up because your gravity is doing its job and kind of trying to push you back, right? So when you are climbing, you will have to move forward on the saddle to kind of keep the center of gravity and keep the front wheel down and stuff. So these are some of the techniques that you need to be aware when dealing with such steep climbs. There are descending or when you are taking a corner, you got to make sure that you are not breaking into the corner. If you are breaking in the corner, you will you will lose traction and wipe out. But if you are able to control your pace entering the corner, before you enter the corner, then that would be much better. So all these things you kind of learn by watching videos or a lot of content out there, that educational content out there with regards to all these techniques, so that you can use to get better.
Nice. And I think this also mostly because you train a lot of folks, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So when did you get into training, and do you like to let me say that again. So when did you get into training, and how many folks do you usually train on a regular basis?
Yeah, so this the coaching side of things kind of started back in 2016. That is when I started BV coaching, as a formal outfit, trying to help fellow riders get better with their training, and trying to get them faster and stronger. So that happened in 2016, but I think from 2013-14 onwards, as people kind of saw me improve, I started racing maybe in 2011 or so, right? And I've been on an improvement trajectory in terms of my races, my speeds, when it comes to I think races like individual time trials and all that. I kept improving from 2011, 12, 13. So people started seeing, I think I have done my first 40 KMPH ITT back in 2013, if I remember correctly. And, people who have been following my journey kind of used to reach out to me asking, hey, how did you kind of improve? What is your training like? Can you help me? What do I need to do to kind of get faster and all this, right? So I used to help them with their training. Very informally, I used to tell them, do this, do a couple of hard sessions during the week, do longer rides in the weekends, do this, maybe you have to improve your nutrition while on the bike. So all these things kind of used to happen starting from 2013-14 onwards, right? But when it when these kind of requests became more and more frequent, I thought it is time to kind of maybe give a structure to it and bring a bit of accountability to it, because when things kind of are free, we don't value the stuff that much. So while I was kind of advising a lot of folks informally without charging them, they would not take it very seriously. They might be following it or not following it, or like that, right? So
if you're good at something, never do it for free.
Yeah, so that too.
Yeah.
So in 2016, I remember May 1st, 2016 is when I kind of decided to formalize this and started BV coaching. And nice. Over the years, we have, I mean, I have worked with many folks from people as young as 13, 12, 13, 14, to as old as, you know, 65, 70 kind of awesome. Thing. So the goals can be as serious as, you know, trying to do well at nationals, to, you know, or it can be like, I want to do TFN Tour of Nilgiris comfortably. It can be I want to be able to ride this 100 kilometers in so and so time, or it can be like I want to climb this Nandi in so and so time, or you know, I just want to get fitter, right? So yeah. the goals that people come with vary, and I tend to you know, tailor those the training plans according to the people's goals, their availability, their other factors in life that kind of also need to be taken into consideration, and tailor the plans to them. So this has been happening from 2016, and it's I think the 8th year now.
Yeah.
So. I've seen, I mean, there are a couple of national medals in there with the folks, and there are a few state champion medals in there, and a ton of satisfied, riders who are able to, maybe get over that hill or complete that tour happily. So that is what kind of gives me that satisfaction to be able to, help others in their journeys.
So how do you measure your client's progress? You just said about getting a satisfaction rate. Obviously, it's never an end, but is there any criteria, or is there any... is there any criteria that you look up to, or you set bars for your clients? Obviously, it's different from person to person, but on a general level.
Yeah, there are the usual fitness metrics, right? They can be as basic as the speed that one can do on a set course, right? That is always a good indicator. You know, we tend to use very standard courses for our ITTs here in Bangalore, right? So that can be a marker. So this ITT, I was able to do, say, 32 kmph or something. So over a period of time, how are you progressing on that course? It can be that, as simple as that.
Nice. Okay.
And there are other things that are more numbers oriented, that there are markers like FTP, functional threshold power, that one can use as a fitness metric. But, you know, there are various other aspects, like how fast are you able to get up that, Nandi climb? So how are you improving? So all these things can become factors that we tend to use to gauge progress. And of course, there are a ton of subjective factors as well that,
obviously varies from person to person.
Correct.
Any advice on how to pick up a starter bike? Especially, I think COVID time, the importance for bike has become so high, and even in New Jersey, New York, they're all sold out because everyone were so into bikes at the COVID time. And for me too, like I was so when I got into biking, when in India, obviously it was just like a starter gear bike, and now I learned a little bit more about biking and etc. Because last year I did a sprint triathlon. And this year I'm going to do an Olympic and a half Ironman. And it's my dream to do a full Ironman.
Nice.
and I'm pretty good at biking and running, but I'm very weak at swimming. That's my weakest part. So I'm going to work on that. So any advice on how to pick a starter bike? And another important question is, how can someone get adjusted to the cleats? I haven't practiced much on the cleats. I tried to do and I fell down. So haven't been using the cleats much. So yeah.
Yeah. So the first question is very important. That is something that I tend to hear most often, you know, people direct messaging me asking, hey, I want to start cycling. I want to get a bike. Which bike do you suggest that I pick up? And this is also a very difficult question to, answer to. Because, see, especially in India, in various towns and cities, smaller towns, bigger towns, cities, you don't know what is available in terms of cycling. So I would always say, go to your, go to the bike shops, say visit 2, 3, 4, whatever, how many ever bike shops there are in the locality. Okay. See what you like. Make a list of all the bikes that you like, okay, and then compare and you have to put it against the budget you have, right? And and pick a bike that is just out of your budget, maybe, right?
Okay.
Yeah, first thing is you have to like the bike. Second is you have, it has to be, it is not something that you want to immediately upgrade from, right? So that you should be able to kind of ride for a few months to maybe a couple of years before having to upgrade. So these are, this is a kind of general advice that I give. But what are the things that you have, when you are looking at a bike, when you visited a ton of bike shops, what are the things that you have to look at, So you have to consider, what is it that I want to do in cycling? Is it, that I want to do triathlons like, you were saying, or is it that I want to ride on trails, like off-roading? Or is it, is my riding going to be mostly on roads? So these are the things that you have to consider. So if you are going to ride mostly on trails or, gravel paths, going and getting a skinny tired road bike is not going to help you with that. So obviously you have to look at mountain bikes, or at least, nowadays the gravel bikes are a thing, that for riding the gravel routes, right? So you have to consider those. Like if you are looking at shorter triathlons, you have to understand, okay, shorter sprint triathlons and all these things, they don't allow time trial bikes. You have to kind of go with a aero road bike, right? So it is some aero road bike, because you need to still be able to go fast. So aero bikes tend to do that. They are also in geometry, they tend to be more closer to time trial and triathlon bikes when compared to, say, normal road bikes, right? So you make a list out of, what are the aero bikes that are kind of there available in my places, and how much do they cost, what is my budget, and then kind of pick accordingly. So these are the things that you would look when you are looking for a, starter bike. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And coming to your next part of the question, cleats, right?
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
It is not, it will not take too many rides, but you have to give it a chance, right? And falling is the rite of passage, I would say, when it comes to using cleats, because
it's a part of the process.
it is a part of process. Yeah. You have to. I mean, my first cleated fall, obviously, was in a parking lot because that is where I practiced, right? Okay. So, and it is, practice in safer environment. Maybe practice on indoor trainer to begin with, so that you can clip in and unclip. Start with a slightly looser tension on the cleats, on the pedals, right? So that it is not as difficult to uncleat. So, that becomes that kind of gives you a little bit of mental relief that okay, it is not as hard to kind of twist out. And when I started with MTB cleats, so they are much easier to get in and get out of, so that also kind of helps. But even if you don't want to take that longer route of trying some MTB cleats and then kind of not using them after you move to road cleats and stuff, even with road cleats, you just start with slightly looser tension, start on your indoor trainer, and then when you are going out, go practice in a parking lot or empty place where you are more conscious. And then it kind of becomes easier. And once you take a fall or two in safer environments, it kind of also, becomes something used of a reminder. You will also get used to it. And in maybe normal rides, you will remember to kind of uncleat.
Yeah. Gotcha. So it becomes like a muscle memory, is it?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take more than 2-3 rides to kind of for you to get used to it once you practice like this. Yeah.
So what are the benefits of using cleats? Will it make you faster, or will it make the ride much better?
So there are a couple of things, right? You are able to use stiffer shoes. The cycling shoes are much stiffer. So what that would mean is that there are lesser hot spots from cycling. So using sneakers or some other things, they are not so stiff shoes, you tend to kind of develop a bit of hot spot and hot spots and stuff. And using sneakers or non-cleated not so stiff shoes, what it means is whatever pressure you are putting on the whatever force you are exerting to move the bike is getting lost in the cushioning that is happening on the right. So you use sneakers and these nice cushioned shoes for running because you want to absorb that energy. So you are wasting a little bit of energy there. So
you want to optimize the performance on the bike, right?
Yeah. So it is safer. When you are spinning and your foot is stable and it is not slipping off the pedal and all that stuff, right? So it is also a bit safer to kind of makes the riding a little bit safer also. Yeah,
my goal is for the next triathlon, I want to make sure I get used to the cleat.
yeah. Practice.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit about the TFN. I'm sorry, is it TFN only, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the TFN. Can you tell us what it is, experiences around it, and why is it so fun?
Mm-hmm. So Tour of Nilgiris is this 7-8 days of riding in the Nilgiris, as the name suggests, right? the hills in around Ooty, and we kind of go through three states, Karnataka, Tamil Nadu and Kerala. So it depends on the what is the route that we take, but it kind of tend to cover all these three states and some of the most beautiful routes that you can kind of see, right? And some of the most hillier, beautiful, you know, country roads and the rides through the tea estates of Nilgiris. It's amazing, amazing riding. And typically the I mean, my first TFN was back in 2011. And it was so fascinating for me. I got to meet 100 other riders, and I got to learn so much by just watching them ride, and you know, learning how are they spinning up those climbs instead of grinding, how are they managing their nutrition and hydration during these long rides, and talking to them, hearing stories from them. And it becomes such a and some of those friends that I made in that tour kind of are still friends even to this day. And I am fortunate enough to kind of go there almost every year since 2011 and make new friends, make new memories, and ride in those beautiful, beautiful roads. Training for 2011 TFN became such a thing for me, such an important thing for me, that I rode, I think, some 11,000-12,000 kilometers in the six months leading up to it.
Awesome.
And that actually made me the cyclist that I am today, and training for that, racing in that. It's an amazing experience that I actually suggest to a lot of people. I tell them, experience it at least one time. You love it.
Yeah.
So now there are a lot more tours that have come up, like Tour of Karnataka is there, the folks the bike affair in Hyderabad, they do a ton of tours that cater to not 100 people, but they kind of take 10-15 people and do these rides. In just now, like I was saying, I came back from a tour in Thailand called Mehong Son Challenge. It is a 650-kilometer loop, starting and ending in Chiang Mai, and we covered 650 kilometers in 7 days of riding with 12,500 meters of elevation overall.
So much fun,
you know. So all these kind of tours give you a chance to meet like-minded people from various walks of life, and they help you grow, learning from others, and also kind of gives you memories that kind of last a lifetime. So much fun.
So beautiful. Yeah. I hope I can do it someday soon.
yeah, sure. You will be able to. Just put it in the calendar.
Yeah. So we are in a world of where there's so much stress and anxiety from just the day-to-day activities, right? How does biking help you relieve that stress and anxiety?
So this is something that I would say someone has to experience to understand fully. Right. There is something I tend to forget what this effect is called. But this psychologists have kind of researched and understood that a simple walk in the nature itself is so beneficial because of the movement of the scenery of by the sides of your eyes, right? So that itself is very therapeutic and very good for the mind and body, apparently. And when you are involved in cycling, so it gives you that feeling, right? That you are always moving ahead in the wilderness, whatever, the trees both sides, you're moving fast, and you also get endorphins out of the out of exercise, right? So it kind of becomes a natural stress buster. So it is something that you need to experience. It can be experienced as much, with as little as a nice little walk in the park, nice little walk in the nature. You start with that, you take it with running or cycling, take it gradually, and you will, reap the benefits of this natural stress-busting, procedure, so to speak. Yeah.
Understood. Yeah. It's very nice. And one of your, I have two more questions. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And for people, for listeners who, one second, let me put it again. I'm a huge fan of your podcast, and it's so good. Just like your personality just makes, I think, everyone just feel like so relaxed. And can you tell us a little bit about your podcast? When did you start it, and how did you make it so big?
Thank you. Thank you for the kind words. The podcast I started back in 2020. It's also a pandemic child. Like most things, this was by that time I started cycling. I was in my fitness journey for the last 12 years by that time, and every year I was like, there are ups and downs in that journey. I would lose fitness by losing track or something or the other kind of comes up, and there are always ups and downs, and I was to be honest struggling to kind of maintain consistency, and all this while I was trying to help others get better, trying to manage my own training, trying to manage work, trying to kind of spend enough time with the family and all these, right? So I asked myself, while I was going through one of those lows, I asked myself, why is it that I am kind of struggling like this? Year after year, why can't I just, why can't the things be always on the upward, right? That is what we kind of fancy, right?
Exactly.
But as I was, struggling with these thoughts, as I was, struggling through some sweet spot intervals on the trainer, the thought came to me that, okay, this, if I am struggling like this, there are others who would be, going through the same process.
Same boat,
right? And is there something that I can do to help myself stay consistent, go through this journey in a little bit better way while also helping others like me, do the same? And that thought is the genesis of the podcast, where I said, I like, wait a minute, who am I? What can define me, right? I am an athlete. I am a full-time working professional. So working athlete, I'm a working athlete. And there are many people like me who are also on the same journey like this. So can I do something? And I enjoy listening to podcasts while working out because they tend to kind of learn from
you.
They tend to enable us to learn from experiences of others, right?
Exactly.
Through stories that they tell, they through the stories of their lives, right? So I tend to put these two together. I enjoy podcast, listening to podcast, maybe something like that. Listening to stories of others like me can help me stay on track, learn from them, and also sharing that with others can also help others learn and stay on track. So that is the kind of genesis of the podcast. Immediately after I got off the trainer, I sketched the idea about the podcast, the name of the podcast and the logo. I kind of roughly sketched and shared with a couple of close friends the idea, and they said, all friends do, they are like, oh, very nice, good idea, and go for it and all that. And that's how it started. And it's been more than 170 weeks an episode goes out every week, every Saturday nowadays. And I've been fortunate enough to interact with a lot of folks and learn from them and share those learnings with folks like us,
everyone.
So it's been a fantastic learning experience itself.
I know. So for the listeners out there, please go check out the Working Athlete podcast by Wiki Winky. So it's a beautiful podcast. There's some podcasts that when you're low, when you listen, you get like really pumped up, or like when you're like, too bored and you just listen to like some like a comedy podcast, it'll just make you feel better, right? And for your podcast, what it does to me is, like I said, it makes me relax. When I'm too stressed or I'm thinking too much, I just listen to your podcast. It just makes me feel like relaxed and makes me feel so peaceful. So if you're out there, go please check it out. I'm sure you'll love it.
Thank you.
So we just spoke about how busy you are in terms of training, in terms of your schedules of races or arranging races and et cetera. And you're also full-time employee, right? How do you manage training, racing, how do you manage time with all of this, and how do you dedicate time to your family?
Right. So this is something that I kind of get asked a lot, but the simple way to kind of answer that is something that I heard very recently from this elite marathoner, Kipchoge, right? He says you got to take the vitamin N regularly.
Yeah.
That vitamin N is by that he means being able to say no to a lot of things, right?
Okay.
So I tend to, when I look at it, I tend to do a lot of these, but I that would mean that I have to say no to a lot of other stuff, right?
Okay.
So I don't go out partying. My day ends at 9 o'clock. My phone goes into do not disturb mode at 9. So you know, I tend to wake up at 4:30, you know, or 5.
That's
at
awesome. The latest. I used to do that when I was a kid.
So it is about saying no to a lot of things and saying yes to the stuff that make you happier, that is meaningful for you. That would mean, you know, I'm not saying that I am perfect in this. This is a journey that I am on, that I am trying to get better at. So, you know, I might be chewing, I might be biting into a lot more than I could chew, but yeah. I am enjoying the process. So I am you know, keeping at things that give me joy, like this podcast. You are caught up with a lot of things and yes. You are not able to maybe you did not record any interviews for a few weeks because you are traveling or you are busy with work or this or that. But, you know, time to push that publish button is drawing near. What do you do?
Yeah.
So there are days when I was just all by myself with a mic. 10-15 minutes of sharing my thoughts on a certain topic and pushing it out. You know, it could be as simple as that, but this was a commitment that I made for myself. No one might be even listening, but this is a commitment that I made to myself, that I would, you know, put out one episode every week. No one might be even, you know, looking forward to listening or nothing. You know, it is just something that I told myself that I would do, that I am, you know, trying to stick to. Yeah.
So inspiring.
Yeah. Thanks.
So what are your next goals from here?
Goals in terms of what?
Like, we just spoke about your whole journey, right? Been biking for so many years, trained so many people. You have one of the best podcasts out there. You've done so many TNF, the Thailand tours. So what are your next goals from here?
The goal remains simple. Have fun and be responsible. Contribute to the community that has given you so much. So those are the things that kind of keep me going. And there are no big grand plans. There are no huge goals. It is just to live each day as it comes and having fun.
Well, so nice. Thank you for taking time and coming on to my show. It was so nice talking to you, and I hope you continue to inspire everyone around you.
Thank you, Praneeth. It was super fun talking to you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.